Welcome to the first episode of Special Education at 11 with Pam Humphrey and Lynn Sullivan. Our topic for today are SPP 7 and 12. So Lynn's going to explain to us everything you want to know about, well, she said maybe not everything you want to know about SPP 7 and 12, but some things you need to know about SPP 7 and 12. Okay, Lynn.
Hey, thanks, Pam. So I thought we'd kind of talk about it from the perspective of what needs to be getting done now.
Okay.
It's the end of the year, trying to get things wrapped up. And for both SPP 7 and 12, there are some now things to get done. So let's start big picture. For both SPP 7 and SPP 12, that data is not drawn from your PIMS or any of your software management programs. It requires direct input into the TEAL application. And access to TEAL goes through the district superintendents, and the superintendents can look at a list that shows who has access to what in the TEAL system right now for okay. Texas. So TEAL, in case you're wondering,
is a Texas Education Agency login.
It's a tab. When you go to the TEA website, there's a tab that you can click on for TEAL. You've got separate passwords for it, but that's where the information is going to be housed for those federal reports that are coming due. So let's talk first about SPP 7.
Okay.
I think the easiest context for 7 is that it's a longitudinal study about program effectiveness. So like any other longitudinal study, you have to have baseline data. And for indicator 7, that is that entry COSIF information that's collected when kids come into the school district and are eligible for special ed services, either as a transfer or during an initial ARB meeting.
Okay, now you use a term I'm not familiar with. So what is a COSIF? Or what does COSIF mean?
Okay, COSIF is the acronym for the actual form or process, and it's Child Outcome Summary Form.
Okay.
Some people call it ECHO, Early Childhood Outcomes.
Okay.
Some people call it SPP 7, and some people have other words for it. but we're going to stick with 7, ECHO, and COSIF.
All righty.
Okay. So there's data that gets taken when kids come into a district, and then that same kind of data is collected under two conditions. Either when that child will be 6 by the following September. So it's called aging out, but basically they are aging out of this longitudinal study, or they've been dismissed by an ARD committee.
Okay, so let me ask you this question. So what is the purpose of SPP 7 for its collecting this data?
Okay, what the federal government is looking for is they see this as a way of determining the effectiveness of a program's services. In essence, how good are they at spending their federal early childhood money to make changes in kids' outcomes. It's been driven by taxpayers who say there's a whole lot of money coming to states to meet the needs of 3, 4, and 5-year-olds with IEPs. What do you have to show for it?
Okay.
That's what this study is about.
Okay, so besides the fact, so when you say effectiveness, you're talking about the growth that students are making. Is that what we're really talking about?
That's really what we're looking at here is, in essence, how well has your program helped this child close the gap to age peers? If the assumption is, if I qualify for special education services, I'm not performing like other 3-year-olds. The presumption of special ed in the early years is we're going to help them get closer to what typical age peers would be doing.
Okay, gotcha now.
So I don't know if there's like something like that at the post-secondary end, which would be the other time I could see this working.
No, I think when we're looking at, you know, throughout the student's education career, when we start looking at their star scores, then we're looking at what growth, are they improving? You know, they might not be able to pass the assessments, but are they showing growth? Are they closing, like you're saying, are they closing the gap each year? So that's probably the closest thing we have.
So looking at it slightly from different data, but both really trying to capture how good did that ARD committee do at developing an IEP, and how effective was that IEP for that child?
Okay.
So then this time of year, that data should be being put into the TEAL system. For seven, it's one of our few indicators where it is student-specific data. We're looking at, is there a match between this child's name, his or her unique ID, school district, and campus assignment? So there are a lot of places where that data entry could not match, might not line up for an individual student. So really the goal then is to find those kids. And there's a great report that helps us find those kids. Under TEAL, if you go to reports, come down to indicator seven. I'm drawing this.
She's drawing it
as we're talking. Yeah. Go down to indicator seven, go over and look at the report that is students aging out.
Okay.
That is a list to help you know who needs exit COSIF data put in the system. TEA has consistently said they don't promise that list is accurate. It's only as good as the entry data you put in 2 or 3 years ago, in essence. The other report you really need to pull right now is to get with your local PEAMS person and run a report for all kids with IEPs who will be six by September 1st, 2019.
Okay.
So hopefully a lot of the same names are on both lists, but they're check and balance for each other on who probably we need to track down, find out what's happened, so that we can close that student out in our longitudinal study.
Okay. So if a child kind of slipped through and you don't have a entry data, you didn't enter the student, what happens?
A couple of things can happen. It happens, I would say, less frequently, okay, but still occurs,
okay,
for a variety of reasons. So if that entry, if that baseline wasn't put in the system for this student 2 or 3 years ago, that student is not in the study.
Okay.
Because I don't have my graph for this kid. The short answer is call me and we'll work through what your options are. You can't create data
right
from 2 or 3 years ago. But we do need to be able to document, in essence, oh, wow, we just found this. This was a mistake that was made 2 years ago. And here's what we're doing now to have a system so that that doesn't happen again in the future.
Let me ask this question. So what do, once they do the summary and they submit it to TEA, how are districts using this data?
I think districts are using it different ways, and probably we're not using it as much and as well as we could. So thank you for asking. I think that one of the ways districts can use this data is see your kids' data globally by a campus, by a district, and see how effective are we as a program? We think we're rocking at this. But what does the data say?
Okay.
The nice thing about it is you can dig down to, in those reports again, you can dig down to campus performance. You can use it for revisiting ARD committee decisions, IEP goals. If there's a pattern, how are we going to address this pattern to increase the likelihood that kids close the gap?
Okay.
Some districts have looked at that data and said, we don't even think this is the right data. We need to retrain our staff because we don't have inter-rater reliability, to borrow a testing word.
Right.
And so we're pretty confident our baseline wasn't good. So
the data is flawed.
So two things, I think. One is looking at the data for patterns in practice. The other one is to look at it from a training perspective and go, wow, we've got to revisit what people think when they're using the COSIF document.
Okay. So instead of thinking about it, SPP 7 or any of the indicators as just something we have to do because TEA says we have to do something, districts are really generating some useful data that could benefit their programs.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the exciting things we really haven't chewed on as much.
Sure.
Because we focused, like you said, we focused on STAR and some of those things, but I got to tell you, you already know from your COSIF data which kids are closing the gap to age peers.
Good. Great, Lynn. Okay, so are we ready to move to SBP 12? All righty. And what is SBP 12?
SBP 12 is looking at a subset of initial referrals to a school district.
All right, continue.
I'm watching Pam's face. She's like, okay, I'm thinking.
Okay, continue.
SBP 12 is looking at those initial referrals that came through ECI, sometimes called Part C, for Region 11 counties, all of our counties in Region 11. Tarrant County MHMR is our ECI provider.
Okay.
So it's just all of those initial referrals that come from Tarrant County MHMR are counted in SBP 12. The goal of SBP 12 is for kids to not get lost. Technically, they've already been found.
Okay.
They got found by Part C. We need to honor that having been found and help that family find out if that child is eligible to continue in IDEA services effective on their third birthday.
Okay.
The goal is if we found you in Part C and you're still eligible for Part B, there shouldn't be a gap in services.
Right.
So Part C, there's processes for all of that, but at its core, SPP 12 is just counting. It's not by the student. But we really do encourage districts to have a data management system so that as these referrals from ECI come in, they're in this spreadsheet and you're already tracking them. And SPP 12 isn't hard to do data entry because you have systems that have collected that data all year long for you.
Okay. So SPP 12 is the indicator where 3 is 3.
3 is 3.
I've heard that most of my life.
Yep. 3 is 3.
But 3 is not really 3. 3 is really 2.11 or 2.9 prior to turning 3.
I think that's a great way to look at it because you have to have it done by third birthday.
Okay.
3 is 3 means ARD met, schedule of services developed, and date special ed services are going to begin is agreed to. All of that is by the child's third birthday.
Okay.
So you're right. For most of us then, that means somewhere around 2.8, 2.9, the district is starting to interact with the family. One thing that adds to the complications for this is that parents have the right to not inform the district they exist. So one of the complications for districts is parents can tell ECI, I get that you think my child is eligible, and I don't want you to tell the district about my kid. And families have that right to, in essence, stop that transition.
Okay. So the district is not responsible. If the parent do not wish to have services, then that's it.
That's it, because the district won't even know about that child.
Right.
That child could reappear before 3. That child could reappear as a 4 or 5-year-old.
Okay.
So part of what we're doing with ECI is helping the ECI staff better inform parents about the path that occurs when you decline working with the district, when you just stop all services, child goes to kindergarten, the district says, where the heck have you been the last 3 years?
Right.
And that is time lost. So we're trying to help ECI do a better job of helping families understand why that continuity is so important.
Okay. So if you have a student or a young child who's going to turn 3 in the summer,
mm-hmm.
So what do districts need to be doing for those students or children?
So the funny thing is, the
is
joke kind of is.
Ha-ha funny? Or is
it? No, it's not really ha-ha funny.
Okay.
The interesting thing is, 3 is 3. Interacting with ECI is a 12-month program.
Okay.
ECI is a 12-month program. So there's two scenarios where summer birthdays, there's one scenario when summer birthdays put us kind of at a wonky place with staff. If a child turns 3 over the summer, the district still has to have that ARD meeting by the third birthday, even if services don't start until the first day of school. The family is entitled to a decision by the district by the child's third birthday.
Okay.
So that means a district might need to have an extended contract or some kind of daily rate system where they can pull staff in to do an FIE, convene that ARD, develop those goals, and get to a decision by the child's third birthday. Some districts forget that and they go, I don't have a fill in the blank on staff right now. That, in terms of compliance, is then you better be getting you one.
Okay.
Because it is by third birthday.
Okay. So no exceptions.
There are some exceptions, but they have to do with actions the parent has taken.
Okay.
Is that where you were headed?
I don't know where I was headed. I just said no exception. Okay.
So there is a way to, in essence, say, yeah, but this wasn't our fault.
Okay.
And basically not our fault involves the district documenting from the very beginning all efforts they have made to keep this family engaged in the referral process. So it's not something I can create now to cover the fact of something I didn't get done in March, for instance. It's that ongoing collection of data. I kind of think of it as a contact log.
Okay.
That is, what all did we do? Did we send them a registered letter? Did we contact the ECI person and tell them we're having trouble getting with the family? What all different kinds of things did the district do to make sure this family really, truly did not want to pursue transition?
Okay. So these students we're talking about are students who came through Part C, through the early childhood intervention, so ECI.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not for the three-year-olds who are at daycare or at home. So what we're only collecting data on are those who came through ECI, correct?
For Indicator 12, it's just the ones who have come through ECI.
Right.
We also have State Performance Plan Indicator 11, who is for, and we're counting there, all referrals.
Okay.
So that's why I said 12 is a subset. So if I have a three-year-old or a fixing-to-be three-year-old who comes in with a parent and mom says, just found out about y'all, I want to find out if my child qualifies for special ed, that three-year-old or fixing-to-be three-year-old is on the regular timeline.
Okay.
In essence, that family is not entitled to three is three.
Okay. Got it.
So there's only one more kind of, since we're talking about summer, one more opportunity, as some people in our region used to call it, one more opportunity is that we have this state MOU between TEA and ECI that says for AI and VI infants and toddlers, the public school district will provide those services. Since ECI is a 12-month program, that means AI and VI staff must be available to implement the plan all 12 months of the year because it's a 12-month plan.
Right.
So AI and VI babies get services through the summer to continue to implement the IFSP, the Individual Family Service Plan. Can't take summers off. And districts need to figure out how they're going to maintain that capacity to implement those goals all during the summer.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes sense.
Okay. You took a breath.
What? No, I was going to ask, is there anything else we need to cover? That's why I was just taking a break. So is there anything else we need to cover, Lynn?
Clearly not. One more thing. When we were talking about Indicator 7, we were talking about how do we make sure these kids are making progress. A pattern that I'm starting to see in our region is that there is almost this lack of honoring of institutional knowledge when kids transition from campus to campus.
Oh, okay.
Mostly I see and hear it when our districts are building early childhood campuses that house all threes and fours. people know their kids, know the systems, mm-hmm. know all of that. That child and family then transitions to an elementary campus. And I think now's the time to be looking at those goals and objectives for those kids that are five transitioning to a kindergarten classroom on an elementary campus and go, is the campus ready, willing, and able to implement this kid's IEP? Is that kindergarten ready? Does she have the knowledge and skills to do this? Do we need to recommend or encourage training for him or her? Does the resource room teacher, who now, poof, magically, is also going to be working with five-year-olds, does that teacher understand what questions, what training, so that we are using this time to build the capacity of the receiving set of teachers to better support this child? Because that kindergartner is still in the longitudinal study.
Okay.
So we still are looking at and will account to the federal government how much progress this child made, even with the transition to a different campus.
Okay. So you're telling me, and you're telling our audience, that for Indicator 7, so when you do your entry, then that entry will go all the way to age 5 through various settings, and we need systems to ensure that those students are making growth and that all the adults understand what their roles in this process is.
That's a great summary sense. I agree. Yes.
Okay.
And it's about coordinating services for each and every student with an IEP.
Okay.
Which I think is a flip that a lot of districts, and I know TEA is starting to talk about too, is that this is a holistic group supporting each and every child. How do we keep track of and how do we support each and every child through this process? I kind of think of SPP indicators as lagging data.
Right.
It's already done. We really can't fix it because mm-hmm. it's about past events. I think SPP 7, when we step back from it, is really showing a path for us. That as you look at that data for your kids, even at a campus level, you really are able to see what skills do these kids need and do I have the right staff there to implement the IEP. I see it as a way of planning for the future and getting back to that point of how I change the trajectory for my 3, 4, and 5-year-olds is really having prepared staff. So this is now a time to be looking at what is that receiving campus going to need to know and be able to do to implement the IEPs of those kindergartners who are still in the longitudinal study.
Okay. Okay, I got that. One more question.
Sure.
So when we're looking at this longitudinal studies, would it be wise that your kindergarten teacher as well as your early childhood teacher do planning together, have conversations about the programs? What is, because the expectation for kindergarten is definitely greater than what it is in your early childhood program.
I agree with you. The premise of your question, I think, is it would be very easy to have a disconnect between 3 and 4 year olds and 5 year olds.
Right.
Best case scenario is we're staffing about each and every kid before that spring ARD meeting, and or the receiving campus has staff attending that ARD meeting so that we have talked about the transition in the context of goals and objectives and schedules of services. The other thing I've seen districts do is really start being intentional about training teachers of 3, 4, 5, and 6 year olds together.
Okay.
If pre-K needs to know it, K needs to know it. Because there's a whole lot of kindergartners that did not go to pre-K. So
right.
There is a huge overlap of skill development. Kindergarten and first. What do they both need to know? Because we know kids have a 3 to 5 year skill span in any grade up through about 2nd grade. So I got to know more than just my grade to meet the needs of all the kids in my class.
Okay. And also, as far as your longitudinal study goes, if you want to see improvement and closing the gap, it would behoove districts to consider as you said, grouping the teachers together and them working together, because everybody can be on the same page. At each phase, the expectations are changing. So once they get to kindergarten, you know, gone are the days where kids come and play and take naps. It's really about
There is a rigor,
right?
And how do we make sure that kids transitioning from an early childhood campus to an elementary campus are prepared for the rigor,
right?
Not necessarily the skills, but the rigor of the expectations. And kindergarten teachers, how do we help kindergarten teachers understand that not everybody, actually in our region, it's less than 50% of the kindergartners have been in a pre-K program. So our kindergarten teachers just are hit with the double whammy,
right,
of kids with a range of skills.
Okay. Is there anything else we need to cover?
No.
No.
Right. I'm pretty sure this is not everything, but enough. Plus, I'm here. You're welcome to call or email me, and we'll walk through specific scenarios.
Okay. Well, thank you, Lynn.
Thank you, Pam.
All right.